for your presence here this evening. I will continue the warning that I gave at first. I thought I was getting better yesterday, and I am. I feel better, but I've got a cold that's sticking with me, and so I could just walk around like the leper and say, unclean, unclean, or you can be wise and just not reach your hand out. I'm trying to use a lot of that Germex. Y'all can cut my whatever you want to pay at the end of the week for all the Germex I've used back there. But I'm trying to stay non-contaminatory, but it will not offend me at all if you just wave and say hello, because I don't want to spread more than the word in that regard. All right, we're going to be starting to get more specific at this point forward. We're starting to talk about pitfalls that we fall into as parents. And we do. If you are a parent, whether you're raising children now, or you've been raising children for a while, or you've raised children in the past, have we made mistakes? Yes, we have. Have we made mistakes that even at the time, sometimes we realized, this is dumb? Yeah. Have we made mistakes where sometimes we thought this will help, and maybe it didn't? We've made mistakes. Children are surprisingly resilient. You remember if you had a house with stairs, you were so careful to make sure that that baby didn't, you know, fall down those three stairs or those four stairs and everything. And then one day, what happened? Bop, 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 and you run in there and he goes, ah, and you pick it, and he's okay. God made him with a low center of gravity and a lot of cushioning, and they can survive a lot, usually. And they can survive the fact that we have made some mistakes. Do we need to keep making mistakes? Do we need to be pushing the baby down the stairs? So as we go through this, I tell people lots of times, preachers start on their own toes first and then work out. As we see some of these things and think about specifics, if it's a mistake we've been making, then what can we do? We can make that adjustment within our family. And take the time to do that and empower yourself with these principles from Proverbs and elsewhere. There's passages in the New Testament about children as well and such. But use them to better equip ourselves to help our children, because that's what we're doing. This is not an ego thing, you know, that we get to get what we want. We're trying to help them grow up to godly, strong young men and young ladies. All right, so let's get going with that. Last night we introduced the first pitfall that too many parents fall into, and that was failing to discipline. Just very quickly to remind ourselves of the passage, Proverbs 13:24, he who spares his rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Notice the purpose, love. What does he do? Disciplines. How? Diligently. Proverbs 19:18. Discipline your son while there is hope. Do not desire his death. Like working with pottery, there's a point where it is very pliable and soft, but after a point, what starts happening? It starts to set and get hard. There's a point when we're not just going to be able to change our children. So when does the child training need to be done? Discipline your children while there's hope. Don't desire his death. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Proverbs 22:15. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. Proverbs 23:13. The rod and reproof bring wisdom. A child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Proverbs 29:15. Correct your son, he will give you comfort, he will also delight your soul. You have seen children that are not disciplined. How well does that work? I'm going to tell you a quick story and then we'll get on to point number two. Years ago, I lived next to some people who went to a good church where I knew lots of people there and everything. And they'd been raised in Christian homes and now they're raising their children. But something has gone wrong. One of the couple has been reading books about what not to do to your children. But type of books that encourage you not to discipline them, not to spank them, et cetera, et cetera. Now, she had the book of Proverbs in her Bible, but she had read this book, and guess what started controlling how they treated that child? He was 4 years old, and I'm going to tell you something sad. I love little kids, and four is like my favorite age. I did not like this boy. And that's kind of shameful to say. You know, how can you not like a four-year-old? Well, I'll describe it to you, and maybe you'll understand my shameful admission. Here they are, yelling for him to come home. I'll change the name of the guilty to forbidden identification. We'll call him Wilbur. Wilbur, come home! There's Wilbur on this side of my home, playing with another boy and just ignoring him. A few minutes later, Wilbur, get over here! He just completely ignores him. A little bit later, Wilbur, we told you to come home! And this goes on. Just every once in a while, one of them would yell or scream, telling Wilbur to come, and he would just absolutely ignore it. Now, when Wilbur got tired of doing what he was doing, he walks across with his little friend in front of me. I'm sitting on my front steps. And I said, Wilbur, I said, why didn't you go when you heard your parents calling you? He goes, I didn't hear them. His little friend said, yes, you did. One day I open up my car door, and there's just a pile of dirt, you know, in the seat that Wilbur's put there for me. Another day, he just opens my door. He doesn't knock on the door. He just opens the door and stands there, and his little overalls are wet in the front and brown in the back, and he announces, I don't have to use the bathroom. Now, you can understand why I wasn't thrilled. Oh, I might get to see Wilbur today. Wilbur was not a very likable child, and that is sad. And whose fault was it? As Wilbur got older, you know whose fault it's going to be? It's going to be Wilbur's fault. But at age four, who was to blame for Wilbur's condition? Parents that listened to pop psychology nonsense instead of to the Holy Scriptures. So, most people will discipline, and let's say this. Just because I'm, oh yeah, I spank my kids, does that mean that you discipline them? Sometimes they're going to need a spanking, but you can give them a smack because you're irritated or you're in a bad mood or something happened you didn't like. That doesn't mean that you're training them or disciplining them. Disciplining them involves doing what's good for them for their future. Training, teaching, it's not just about spanking. It's about a lot of things. So don't make the mistake of failing to discipline. Second mistake, rewarding misbehavior. Well, that seems like a no-brainer. Yeah, of course you shouldn't reward misbehavior. Who would do that? Parents do it all the time. I don't mean they walk up and they say, hey, buddy, go kick grandma on the knee and I'll give you $5. You know, they don't do that. But here's how they reward misbehavior. Mom's going through the grocery store and she said, we're just going to get a couple of things. We're not going to get a lot of stuff. And we need to get home, get supper ready. And he spots something there he wants, you know, super sugar cocoa boom booms or whatever. He said, I want that, I want that, I want that. And she says, what? Shh, no, 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 sit down. We're not going to get that. And does he go, yes, ma'am? No. He goes, I want it, I want it, I want that. He said, shh, shh, quiet. We cannot get that. You need to sit down. We're not going to get that. He says, I want that. You're mean. You're mean. You never buy me anything. Shh, shh. We'll call him Wilbur. Wilbur, you're embarrassing me. Do you think Wilbur goes, oh, I've embarrassed my mother? Well, that's Wilbur's purpose. He knows which button to push. I hate you. You better not. Shh, shh, shh. And now everybody's looking, and now mom is embarrassed. I'm sorry. Shh, you're embarrassing me. Shh, 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 shh. And then what does mom do? I gotta be quiet. And by extortion, he's got what? What did mom just do? She rewarded misbehavior. Do you remember a few years ago when you started hearing about the Somali pirates? I don't know what your reaction was, but I was like, pirates? Really? You know, this is the 21st century and we got pirates, you know, going up and taking a boat and demanding money. Really? Why did they keep doing it? Because the owners of the boats or the countries that they were from were dropping bags full of millions of dollars to them to get their ship back and their thing. So each time they did that, what were they doing? Rewarding misbehavior. So what did the pirates keep doing? They kept doing it. When you reward misbehavior, you encourage it. Now, when some other things were done, that kind of discouraged the pirates. And I haven't heard a lot about Somali pirates lately. But this is what happens a lot. Why do children throw tantrums? To manipulate mom and dad into getting what they want. So understand, let's remember this. When a child is misbehaving to get what they want, the last thing in the world they should get is what they want. When they are meant to give them what they want, when they are misbehaving, you have just endorsed and rewarded the misbehavior and you're asking for more of it. Lowering the bar and accommodating and facilitating misbehavior. So it can happen like this. Here's mom number one, and she's come over to mom number two's house, and she's brought her maybe 7-year-old, and this mom here at the house, maybe she's got a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old. Well, the 2 and the 3-year-old, maybe they're watching some very childish 2 and 3 level, you know, video. Well, video, there it is. CD, whatever, whatever they show now. Some type of thing on a screen. And the 7-year-old goes in there while the moms are having tea, and he starts talking about how that's dumb and stupid, and he wants to watch his, you know, action blow up or whatever, and they're liking what they're watching, and he starts insulting it, and he pushes the little boys aside, and he goes over and he changes it to watch what he wanted, and then the 2-year-old starts crying. Now, both moms come in to see what's happening. What should the mom of the little bully do? He has just misbehaved to get to see his program when he's a guest at somebody else's house and should be wanting to do well for the littler children. What should the mom of that little bully, that little selfish boy do? He needs to be punished, and he needs to be punished now. And what's the last thing he should get? But instead, mom comes in, and so now she's going to say a lot of the right words. Oh, we'll keep going with Wilbur. Wilbur. Wilbur's a safe one because nobody hears his name Wilbur. Oh, Wilbur, you shouldn't do like that. You shouldn't push a little child. You should share. But that's just kind of nonsense talk because she's not going to back it up. That's about what? That's about making her look good kind of in front of the other mom. Because then she goes, do you have another TV where maybe my boy can watch his, film or whatever, cartoon, whatever it is, so he won't bother them? You see what she just did? She's lowering the bar. She's accommodating the misbehavior, and she's acting like she's done something, but do you think he took any of that to heart? No. That boy needs to be spanked. And if it was my child, you know where I'd do the spanking? Right in front of those other boys. And he would go and he would apologize to both of those boys and he would apologize to their mother, and he would not watch anything. He would sit with me until we left. Now, is that doing the child a disfavor or a favor? That's doing the child a favor. Because is he going to end up being a happy, adjusted individual if he keeps behaving like that? You know, you hear about people doing road rage on, you know, on the streets and stuff. I don't know, because I've not done a big survey and such. But there are kids that when they're little, they throw temper tantrums, and they don't learn to be considerate, and they don't learn, you know, about anything. Well, if they're not trained, they grow up. And so what do you suppose they might do when they're out on the road and something didn't go their way? So, don't do that. Letting a child get his way is not doing him a favor. It will spoil him. Letting a child get his way will not satisfy him. It will spoil him. There was a study done where they took a playground, and here's the playground, and there's a busy street here, here, here. It's in a city, so you got buses, trucks, strangers, all kind of stuff. You know where the kids played? Toward the middle of the playground. They put up a fence, and guess where the kids played? All over the playground. Why? Because, let me see if I can do something about that wire. They played all over the playground because now they know where the boundaries are. They know where they can go, and they know where they're safe. Children do well with boundaries. Some of you have homes where there is structure and love and joy and boundaries in the home, and sometimes you've had children in your home that come from homes without boundaries. Now, somebody might think, oh, those children aren't going to like this home. There's too many rules and boundaries. But what really happens when those children come in your home? They love it, don't they? There's a place where they're secure. And somebody actually cares enough to have some rules. Children thrive better with boundaries. Somebody said that the difference between a boy and a pig is that you give both of them everything they want, you'll get a really, really good tasting pig, but you'll get a really, really rotten boy. The rod and reproof bring wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother, Proverbs 29:15. Next mistake, expecting misbehavior. That's different than rewarding misbehavior. And it's easy to slip into this one. Expecting misbehavior doesn't mean you want misbehavior, doesn't mean you hope for misbehavior, it doesn't mean you prefer misbehavior. It means we've given up on some particular area. We've waxed weary in well-doing, and we've gotten to where what? He's going to act up. He's going to pitch a fit about that. What's just happened? Instead of keeping the battle going until we won, remember we talked about the Marine sergeant? When those guys come off the bus, does he expect that they're going to learn how to do a military push-up and obey the rules and stuff? Yes, he does. Does that mean that's where they are now? No. But where is he going to get those boys? He's going to get them there because he expects it. But if as they come off, if he's going, oh, well, he probably won't be able to do that, and he's probably not going to march well. He's probably not going to listen very well. Is he going to get those boys where they need to be trained? So when we start saying things like this, oh, we can't take him to the restroom. There's no way Junior's going to sit still for an hour. Well, after that sugar, he's going to be impossible. Oh, I'll never get him to eat that. Sorry, my son's not much of a sharer. Is there much hope that that child is going to do better? The one responsible for training him has thrown in the towel and is just expecting, well, that's the way he's going to be. We need to love our children enough not to give up on them. There's a point at which the clay gets harder and harder, and a point where we might not have much impact. That's partly why it's so important to start child training early and keep up on it. And who hears dad or mom say all those things? Yeah, that little boy hears that. that little girl hears that. And let me say this. I understand some people have allergies. I understand some people have certain biological things where certain foods don't work as well with them or can cause them problems. And so if you have somebody in your family in a situation where this food really causes a serious medical issue and you understand that and your doctor understands that, okay, I'm not your doctor. But I'm going to tell you this. Most of the time I hear this sugar thing, sugar is not the problem. Because I have been to lots of birthday parties, and you have too, where you know what the well-behaved, well-disciplined children, you know what they do? At the end, when their mama tells them it's time to go, let's help clean up and let's help Mrs. Johnson, you know, tidy up the place. What do the well-trained children do? They do it. And what do they say to Mrs. Johnson? Thank you for letting me come. And they might be disappointed, but are they kicking their feet and screaming because it's time to go? No, they're not. Does that mean they didn't have any fun at the party? Oh, no, they had fun. They were running and jumping and bouncing and all the different games. They were giggling and they were having a big blast. And did they have any sugar at that party? They had birthday cake with icing that thick on it, plus ice cream, and they drank Kool-Aid. You know, you could have just taken a bag of sugar and just put it down their throat. Did that mean they had to misbehave? No. And an untrained child, he might not have had a bite of sugar. But when it's time to go, is he going to be the one that behaves? Or is he the one that's going to pitch a fit? Sugar does give energy, but that is not an excuse for bad behavior. Did anybody fill your car up with gasoline today? Let's suppose, Brad, you went and you put some super in there, some 95 octane stuff. Then you get in there, 95 octane, full tank of gas. The state trooper pulls him over and Brad just says, well, after all that high octane gas, I couldn't. No. It's the same foolish argument. Just because you put a lot of energy source in there doesn't mean you have to misbehave. So let's not expect misbehavior. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. The rod of discipline will drive it far from him. And let's expect obedience. Does that mean that they will always obey? No. But when they disobey, what are we going to change? Are we going to change our expectation, or are we going to help them change their behavior? What's the parent's job? To help them change their behavior. Don't let it work the other way. Number four, failing to be consistent. Has anybody here ever failed to be consistent? Yep. I've done that. Probably some of you have done that. What did the text in Proverbs 13 said? It said, he who spares the rod hates the son, but the one who loves him disciplines him diligently. Or as a child psychologist, some of them don't know much what they're talking about. In fact, I'll give you. One time I was doing this series up near Washington, D.C., and one of the sisters brought a friend of hers with her. Her husband was a child psychology expert. Okay? He had gotten his degree, and he was, I guess, important enough that when they had one of the school shootings out in the Midwest, the government flew him out there, or the school district or whatever, to go out there and help with the counseling of the children. Why? Because he was what? Child expert. He was not a child expert. But this lady came, he didn't come, but the sister knew the family and said, he has one daughter and she is in total rebellion. You know, she dressed in all that black, goth, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you know what that tells me? If you have just one child and she's all into black, goth, death type of stuff and is in total rebellion to you, I'm going to tell you one thing you're not. You are not an expert on child raising and on children. Come on, there's psychology. I don't care what the piece of paper on the wall says. I don't care how much you pay to university to take some courses. If that's what you've done, it doesn't look like you were a child expert. But this one actually was pretty good. He said, children are like little gamblers, and they will go for the odds. In other words, when we are inconsistent, sometimes when they talk back to mom, they're punished. But sometimes when they talk back, they get away with it. Sometimes when they disobey and argue until they get their way, they don't get their way. But sometimes when they argue and argue, mom gives up and they get their way. What's going to happen tomorrow when mom says to do something they don't want to do it? Is it because they know they're going to win? No. They've gotten a lot of spankings, right? They spend a lot of time in timeout when mom, bothered to. They got spankings and went to bed without dessert various times, but then a bunch of other times. So why do they do it? On the chance that it will pay off. We'll illustrate it like this. Do y'all have the lottery here in Alabama? All right. The lottery's a big problem. If you're in certain lines of where you've dealt with some of those people, you know what I'm talking about. Gas station near my house, I asked them there one time, because I'm standing in line behind people buying their tickets. I said, how much do most people spend on the lottery? And he said, like $50 a week. Yeah. She's going, that's $200 a month. Here's my question for you. People here in Alabama, they're playing the lottery. They go in there to the convenience store tonight, if that's where they do it here, and they put down $50 for this scratch-off and this play seven and all their little cards. Are they doing that because they really believe this week they're going to win? No. They don't really believe that this week they're going to win. They've been doing it for 3 years. And they won maybe one time. I talked to a guy, he played the lottery every Friday for about a year. He would blow all of his pay. He let his wife support the family. He would take his pay. He was paid cash under the table for various things. And he would take his cash and blow it, pretty much every bit of it, every week on Friday on scratch-offs for a year. I said, did you ever win big? He said, yes, once. I said, how much did you win? He said, $1,000. So you do the math. That was not very smart. So even him, do you think that every time he thought he was really going to win? No. He knows he's going to lose a lot, but why did he keep doing it? Because there's a chance he's going to win. Now, if the state of Alabama told people, you know what, we're not going to pay any more for anything. Nobody gets $27 million. Nobody gets an instant $20. Nobody wins $1,000. Nobody wins anything. But if you like doing the numbers and just want to benefit, the state treasury, you can keep playing the lottery. How many people would keep playing the lottery? Boom! That would kill it. Why? What changed? It just went from, I will probably lose, there's a chance, to, I will lose, and there's not a chance. That's when people would stop playing the lottery. When is juniors going to start obeying? When there's a chance that it pays off, guess what? Our inconsistency is going to do what? It's going to encourage junior to quit playing the lottery. When's he going to quit playing the lottery? When he becomes fully realizing the fact, I am not going to win. This is not going to pay off. That's when he's going to get the message. Eliminate occasional payoffs. Let the child realize the lottery is shut down. No parking. let's say there's, I don't know if you have a historic area down in Pensacola. Let's assume for the sake of argument here that you do. And I'll slide this over here, see if that'll work better. Suppose there's an old historic area where tourists walk, and they've got a lot of no parking signs. And a lot of tourists come through there and want to see that area. If you don't have it there, imagine some other historic area around. If they mean it, and if somebody parks there, first a boot is stuck on their car, and then a tow truck comes and hauls it away, and they got to pay a fine and go, you know, get the car, then is that place going to stay clear of cars? Yes, it is. But let's suppose that everybody knows that this is their policy. The meter maid walks around giving warnings. And so they've got their sign that says, no parking. And you can pull up and you can park there and stay there 5-10 minutes. And after 10 minutes, this is what you're going to get. Please do not park here. After 20 minutes, she sticks on another one. We ask you not to park here. After 30 minutes, you get another one. I really mean it. Do not park here. After 40 minutes, don't make me tell you again. After 50 minutes, I'm going to start counting to 10. And then after an hour, all right, now you're getting a $50 fine. What do you suppose that no parking area would look like? If everybody knows this is what goes on. Is it going to be empty of cars? No, it's going to be full cars. This color ticket, and this color ticket, and this color ticket, and this color ticket, and this color ticket. And they've learned, when do you move your car? Right about number 9. You know, you got to get the car out of there. Then, that's what they learned. Little kids learn that. I was in Nebraska doing this series, and somebody told me about somebody in their family years ago. Mary Elizabeth was her name. And she's upstairs, and her mother calls her, Mary, come down here. Later. Mary, get down here now. Mary, come down here. And then the middle name was employed. Mary Elizabeth, get down here. And the aunt said, Mary, why don't you go down there? Mary Elizabeth said, she'll call me 3 more times. So when we're not being consistent, kids learn we're not being consistent. So, we need to just, what's the choice? Do we want to go through all that other stuff? Don't make me tell you again, I'm counting to 10, etc. I watched a woman one time, she was telling her little boy, don't do that, don't touch it, don't touch that. I said, don't touch that. He's looking at her, he just goes ahead and gets his hearing. Oh, I'm going to get him a hearing aid. Mistake number 5. I don't have time. A mother told me one time, she had several children, and this middle one, there's something wrong with him. There's something wrong with him. Listen to him. She'd call me up on the phone. Listen to him. And he's kind of pitching a fit. Did you hear that? That's what I'm dealing with. You know, there's something wrong with him. Children come into the world different. Her oldest was kind of a pleaser, wanted to please. He wasn't really a pleaser. We're going to talk about that later. Don't make the mistake of thinking, oh, this one's great, or what's wrong? Both children need to be trained, not necessarily in the same direction. We'll talk more about that later. Well, I'll just say this for now. Pleasers need to be trained too. Because if they are just interested in pleasing people, what's going to happen when they go to that first party and somebody starts passing around drugs and alcohol, saying, come on. They're motivated just to please people, what's going to happen? And I'll tell you what, I think a lot of the most important people in history were probably stubborn little kids. Because if you've got backbone, that's a valuable thing if you learn to do something besides be selfish with it. We'll talk more about that later. Children of all types need training. But this one was not like that one. And one day I just took him with me. You know what? That little boy was very good. I said, there's something wrong with him. I said, he doesn't act that way when he's around me. Well, that's because he's with you. So guess what? Maybe she should have figured out it wasn't his problem so much as her problem. But one time she said, well, I just don't have time to correct every disobedience. You know, she's got to get them to soccer practice and this and that and that. What is more important? Your child's soul and the character that he needs to deal with other people in society and before God? Or making sure that you got your full schedule in of everything that you thought you were going to accomplish that day? You know what? When our children need us and they need training, we might not get done everything that we had put on our calendar for that day. When I found out that this day my son needs to learn this lesson, my daughter needs has gotten into this problem and I need to deal with that, what needs to take priority on mom's calendar that day? Saying, I don't have time. That's like saying, I don't have time to get rid of lice. Is anybody ever, little girl comes, I've got lice. We don't have time to deal with that right now. It's probably just a phase. No, that's not going to get better. You understand that that needs to be dealt with. Well, guess what bad behavior needs to be? It needs to be dealt with. Child training time is well-invested time, and it saves time. You might have to spend an hour and a half today going over one principle. And let me tell you something. If we think, well, I spanked him for it, I'm done. Did he walk off angry and refuse to apologize? We're not done. This is a good time for a child to learn the importance of an apology. He needs to go over there and say, Mom, I'm sorry that I spoke disrespectfully. Sister, I'm sorry I was mean to you. That's where we can see what? That they learned the lesson. Is it going to take some time sometimes? Yeah, it's going to take some time. But it's well invested time. What does Hebrews 12 say? Look at it with me. All discipline for the moment seems not joyful, but sorrowful. Yet afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit. You've all seen just misbehaved children. You've seen brats, right? Would anybody like to take your child right now, that's well behaved, and you're offered, you can have X number of free hours back if you agree it's going to turn your child into a miserable little brat? Does anybody want to make that trade? No. So don't do it on the way going in, because that is the trade that some parents make going in. I don't have time to deal with that. He who spares the rod hates the son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Let's do one more. Failing to control self. Being a parent doesn't mean that we just get to execute our wrath upon a child. A parent is an adult, and abusive parents have done terrible things to children. And I'm glad we live in a society where those people, at least some of the time, end up getting caught and put in jail. And some of them need worse than that. It should be done out of love. But there's a difference between discipline and abuse. And there's a difference between discipline and yelling. Right now I got a sneeze that keeps wanting to come. I was watching a program where they had a child expert. And they had a man and a woman hosting the talk show, and they're interviewing Mr. Expert. And he's saying, and it's important that we never strike a child. You know, my mom didn't say, I'm going to strike you. She said, I'm going to spank you. You know, go get a switch. You're going to. But, you know, they say, hit, strike, etc. My mom didn't go around punching us or kicking us or stuff. She'd bend us over the bed, and she would give it, because she loved us and wanted good for us, she gave us spanks, and I'm thankful she did. Dad gave them too. But he's saying it's important that we never strike a child. And the female host had enough sense to say, well, now I've got a 2-year-old. And when he's reaching for like a knife or something, you know, I'll take his little hand and I'll say, no, no. And the expert goes, and it's important to know that that's wrong. Yeah. And then a lady up in the audience says, my problem is that I'm always yelling and screaming at my kids. And the expert says, oh, it was basically, don't worry about that. I yell and scream at my kids too. Okay, let's just back up and evaluate this expert right here. He yells and screams at his kid. If you grew up in a loving home where there were rules and you were expected to follow, now some of you probably grew up in an abusive home. And that's sad. And you know the pain that comes from that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if you grew up in a loving home where you knew mom loves me, dad loves me, but if I did wrong, they cared enough about God and me that there were going to be consequences. If you grew up in that type of a home, would you have rather had them scream and yell at you than get the occasional spanking? No! I'm glad I got those spankings instead of having them yelling and screaming, right? So which is really the abusive thing here? We're going to end with, we're going to give an illustration, but first let me say this. The illustration is going to take a couple minutes, pardon me, but I want to squeeze it in. After this, don't do these things. Why won't he obey? Aaron, I'm going to use you. I like Aaron. He's a good guy, but we're going to pretend that he's been a real stinker, and I'm going to be a foolish parent. Oh, I don't know what's wrong with you. Why won't you obey? What's wrong with you? What message is that sending to a little guy? You ever heard parents talk to their kids like that? What did that just say? That just said, here's an adult telling the child, A what? There's something wrong with you. And what? We don't know what it is. You see how insecure that's going to make a child feel? How are they going to feel about themselves? They've just been told, I'm defective. There is something wrong with me. And the adults that know how to drive cars and make food and all that stuff, they can't figure out what it is. How motivating is that to do better? Isn't that abusive? Now, here's the test that we're going to finish with. I'm going to try to shorten it up and do it quicker than I usually do it. It's the vase test, okay? So, for the scenario for this, if you've got a rule saying no balls in the house and he knows it, he should be, you know, understand this already. But for the scenario, just very quickly, we're going to say, you have not made that rule. We've got a room in our house. Where will that balls go? And so it's not that you have to have that rule or not. The point is, it's your house, your rules. And a house where there are 20 rules that are enforced is better than the house where there's 470 rules and you never know which one's going to be enforced. But in this house, there's been no rule. But Junior comes in, and he's got a ball, and he's throwing it, and he's bouncing it. Mom looks over there and sees that he's near her prized possession. It is a vase from her great-grandmother. And she took it to Antiques Roadshow, and it is worth $3,000. And she realizes that Junior is in the same room with my vase. And she says, Junior, don't throw that ball in the house. Junior looks at her. He heard what she said. And he throws the ball again and catches it. What do you do? I tell you what a lot of moms do. Junior, I said, don't throw the ball in the house. And if he throws it again, Junior, don't make me tell you again, don't throw that ball in the house. If you get, Junior, don't make me, right? Is he taking it very seriously? No. But what if this happens? And it bounces off of that, and it ricochets over there, and it hits that vase and it shatters into a bunch of pieces. Does mom stay calm? Oh, no. Does mom say, Junior, I asked you not to do that? No, mom goes ballistic now. Mom is screaming and yelling and she's snatching him up and she is fit to be tied. Why? And see, he may get a beating now. Why? Because she loves him? No. She loved that vase. It's pretty simple when you think about it. In scenario A, nothing was broken. Reaction, no big deal. She just has asked you not to do that. Scenario B, it's shattered. Big deal. Or is it going to be this? No big deal. She says, asked you not to do that. No. It's not going to be that. He is in big trouble now. He's going to get it. Why? Because the vase was smashed. You know what? He should have been in big trouble here. This is where he should have been in big trouble. Because guess what, Mom? There's something in that room worth a whole lot more than $3,000. And there's a family heirloom in that room that's a lot more important than some vase that got passed down. And it's your son. And when he looked at you and chose to defy you, there was already something broken in that room, and it needed to be fixed. And when he looked her in the eye and just defiantly did it again, everything else should have stopped. It doesn't matter that the vase would still say. That's not the issue. She comes over cool, calm, and collected, but this is serious. And he is talked to about it. He is reproved. He is punished. And he has to apologize to mom. He gets his spanking. He gets his hug. He's learned his lesson. And it's repaired. Because you know what? Junior might break that vase by accident. Dad might come in and say, Junior, catch. And he tries to catch it, and he doesn't do well. It deflects off his thumb, and it hits the vase, and it shatters. Should Junior be in trouble at all? No. Is it sad that the vase got broke? Yeah, that's very, very sad. Sorry about your vase. But is it Junior's fault? No. That was an accident. Dad may be in trouble, but it's not Junior's fault. So just evaluating things. What is it we're getting upset about? If when we're trying to help our children, if we're losing control of ourselves, is that going to be effective discipline? We need to be in control. And so we need to be calm, consistent, and in control. Sorry for going over time, but I wanted to get that last illustration out there. If you need to submit to your Heavenly Father and return to Him and respond to the gospel invitation, won't you do so as we stand and sing?